11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running, liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour, liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hey folks, welcome to episode 6 of Beyond the Handle. It is March 16th, 2015. I am your host, Alan, also known as @Slip on Twitter. That's Slip with five eyes, or Slip. On today's episode, I interview Travis Rubinick, who is an editor at Arctic Ice Hockey, and also does the Jetstream podcast, which is a podcast that comes out weekly. It's a Winnipeg Jets podcast, and you can download that podcast over at iTunes and Stitcher, and you can also find them on YouTube. We talk quite a bit about the content of the podcast. It is well worth checking out. Travis is also taking his master's in kinesiology and is very interested in concussion research, diagnosis, and treatment. And so we talk quite a bit about that, and of course, what show isn't complete here in Winnipeg without some Winnipeg Jets talk. Last week's episode, which featured Ryan Blight, or RB18 on Twitter, received, again, a lot of positive feedback. Very much appreciate anybody who has written to me or written to RB with really nice words about the show. Well over 100 downloads, actually approaching 150, and a growth in subscriptions, too. So I continue to be humbled by the people who are out there that are listening and are providing some great feedback to me and to the guests of the show. Thank you so, so much. So let's get right into the interview. This is Travis Rubinick here on Beyond the Handle. All right, it's episode 6 of Beyond the Handle. Another great guest here in the studio with me. I have Mr. Travis Rubinick, @TRubinick.
Yeah, that's how I came about.
on Twitter, who is, are you an editor with Arctic Ice Hockey?
Technically, yes. I don't do much of the editing. I kind of let them know when I first started that I needed to take a step back because of school. But yeah, I do have a editing title with them, but mostly just with the podcast.
And where I've heard you the most is on the Jetstream podcast. I think you've done just over 60 episodes so far.
Yeah, we recorded episode 66 yesterday.
And that is a weekly podcast. You can find it at Jetstream on Twitter.
Yeah, at Jetstream Pod on Twitter, jetstreampodcast.com as well.
And that's also on YouTube. If you actually just go to YouTube and type in Jetstream Podcast, all the episodes will pop up there for you, so you can get it just audio, but I would recommend checking out the video as well, and we'll talk about that as we go through the questions here. So normally I start off by asking people the story behind their Twitter handle, but I think yours is pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory. I'm one of the, as we've kind of talked about in Jetstream a couple of times, I'm one of the rare few who actually got the magic of my own name, which I think has a lot to do with my weird last name that nobody ever understands. So yeah, I kind of lucked into mine.
So I'm going to ask you instead, you said that there was a story behind the silent H in Rubinick?
Yeah, there's actually two divisions. There's the H Rubinicks and the non-H Rubinicks. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, my dad's dad, just out of nowhere, it's either my dad's dad or my dad's grandpa, just out of nowhere threw an H on a last name on a birth certificate, and no one really pondered too much about it. Just kind of happened, and then by the time people were actually wondering about it, he had already passed away, and no one really knows why he did it. We don't know if it was a mistake or if it was just did something on purpose, but it seems pretty random to throw an H in front of an R.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, there's a bunch of Rubinicks that I'm related to that don't have the H, and there's a few of us now that do have an H, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty random.
Is that, this is mostly in the city, or are there?
Just outside of Russell, Manitoba, there's a small farming community called Angusville, where we have a family farm, and those are mostly the R Rubinicks, but yeah, they're my dad's cousins and whatnot, so I guess technically my second cousins in a way. But yeah, there's a bit of them out there. We've got some family in Dryden, Ontario now. So my dad's sister's out there. My dad's brother's out in Wainwright. And then, yeah, I'm here. Most of my mom's family's right around the city of Winnipeg, so.
And you do a spelling bee every week on your podcast.
Yeah.
You ever use, have you ever given somebody the test with Rubinick?
I think, well, both Joe and Neil know how to spell my last, I hope. I actually haven't asked him in a while. I'm going to have to throw that at Joe because he's always getting us. But I'm usually quite surprised if people get my name right. Usually once they've seen it, they know there's an H there, but they get lost, whether it's I-U-K or I-C-K, and that's where I lose people. But yeah, even throughout high school, I had teachers who never really learned how to say my last name. They're just kind of, it's one of those ones you see and don't even try.
Yeah.
Until you get forced to try it, and then it's usually just hilarious for me at that point.
Or they just call you Travis.
Yeah,
like, yeah, Travis, part. Hey.
I actually had a history teacher who, lovely old lady, but I was in her class for a full semester, and she called me Trevor the entire time, and I corrected her for the first, like, 2 months of school, and just by the end of it, it was, okay, I'm Trevor.
All right, good job, Trevor.
Yeah, pretty much.
were you born and raised in Winnipeg?
Yep, I've lived in the same house my entire life. We talked about it on the podcast, too, actually looking for a place, sort of, right now to move out of. It's been nice to kind of stay home throughout school and save a decent amount of money, so especially now with how much work I have to do. So,
you are the blogger that lives in mom's basement?
Quite literally, yeah. I'm in the freezing cold basement. And yeah, that's where it all started, and it hasn't really expanded from there yet. Well, I guess we're in Neil's basement most time for the podcast, but yeah, we haven't expanded past the basement yet.
So, a question that I'm sure a lot of people wonder, as a born and raised Winnipegger, and a prominent member of the Winnipeg Jets blogging community, what's with the Leafs?
I get that a lot, especially once people are often surprised that I even write about the Jets when they know me. It's quite a weird situation because none of my family is Leaf fans. I get more hate from my actual family about being a Leaf fan than I do anybody else. I think it was just one of those things where I was 6 years old or 5 years old when the Jets first left, so I never really got into that side of things. Mm-hmm. I was growing up when the Leafs were actually a relevant team, and yeah, I just kind of started watching Hockey Night in Canada, and they were obviously the team that was always on there. So I started kind of watching them a bit through that, and then I've always been one to kind of cheer against what everybody cheers for in a way. Like, I always cheer for the underdog for some reason in most situations, which has not done me well in the past with my sports teams. And my buddy was a Sens fan, and the Sens always killed the Leafs the regular season, but the Leafs would always get them in the playoffs, and everybody hated the Leafs, so I think I just kind of adopted them. And yeah, ever since then, like Matt Sundin's by far been my favorite hockey player. It's just kind of stuck, and I guess it says how stubborn I am that I won't let it change. It was obviously a bit of a pull when the Jets first came back. And throughout high school, I would always write, most of my projects throughout high school were about the potential of the Jets coming back and essays about how it would work and all this kind of stuff. But it's always been the Leafs, and I think it'll always be the Leafs.
Didn't denounce your loyalty to the Leafs. Like I was saying on Arby's show, I lived in Edmonton and in Ottawa, so most recently a Sens fan.
Yeah.
The moment the Jets came back, done with the Senators.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I feel like I've just put so much into the Leafs and so much pain and torture and dealing with them for all these years that it would just be too easy to just back away from it all. I have a bunch of little reasons, stuff just like the resiliency and the sticking through is something until it actually gets done, and that's just stuff I like to believe in. And I don't know, I think just sticking with a Leafs fan kind of symbolizes it all pretty nicely for me. So as painful as it is, I almost would be missing it if I wasn't a Leafs fan. So yeah, I've stuck with them.
Okay. What came first, your time with Arctic Ice Hockey or the podcast?
Technically the podcast came first. I started with JetsNation.ca, and that was kind of appeared the lockout year. The Jets came back for their first year, and I was watching them a little bit and kind of paying attention a bit there. And then the lockout hit, and it was just a period of, well, I've got nothing to do hockey-wise, so what's going on? And I really just kind of then realized how much I really, really did enjoy really diving into hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a lot of the advanced stuff started first popping up to me. And then I saw that Jets Nation, I was a big follower of Leafs Nation. That's where I first kind of saw it. And then when the lockout ended, it was the big, yes, I can't get enough of hockey anymore. And then I saw that Jets Nation was starting up at that point or trying to revive themselves. So they made a call for bloggers. That point in time, I was kind of in a downtime of my undergrad. So
okay.
I had a lot of time on my hands. So I thought, okay, well, might as well give it a shot. Started with jetsnation.ca from that. Eventually, I don't know if you want the full story of how the podcast started, if you want to start
sure.
that later. Neil had been a big guy for podcasts and doing his own stuff for a long time. And he would always kind of talked about wanting to, even if it was just producing something and not necessarily being something where he was the content provider all the time. And I was looking for another outlet for doing Jets stuff, and I was kind of starting to get to the point where I couldn't write as much as I wanted to, but I wanted to talk about the Jets a lot. So we kind of just both kind of ran into each other just randomly when he was doing another podcast of his, and he used to have me on just talk hockey, and we just were throwing ideas around, and the idea came, well, why don't we do something about the Jets? Because there really wasn't that much outside of the 1290s and Illegal Curve, who at that point had become part of 1290, mm-hmm. and I guess we just kind of saw a bit of a hole there that we wanted to do something with. And we met a couple times, we talked about it a few times, and Joe actually wasn't even originally going to be the other guy on it. That was our big thing, is we didn't know who this other person was going to be, because anyone who listens to Jetstream kind of knows Neil isn't our hockey guy. Neil's been a big basketball guy. That's how I know Neil. I played basketball with him for years, and one of my best friends throughout school, and we were kind of looking for that extra hole, and we couldn't really find someone that would be able to commit to doing it every week. And then Joe, who, again, a great friend of mine since high school,
mm-hmm.
Was available, and I know he was into hockey. I knew he wasn't as in-depth with a lot of stuff as I was at the point that we wanted to start it, but we had him on the first one, and if you actually go back and listen to the first episode, I say straight up that Joe's probably not going to be there every week. I think I listened to the very start of a few weeks ago, and I think I say Joe's with us this week, and our goal at that point in time was just to roll through people.
Okay.
And yeah, he ended up sticking around and started having him every week, and from there, it kind of kept going on, and then I ended up going over to Arctic Ice because Jets Nation kind of slowed down a bit, and man, it's how history happens.
And how long have you been with Arctic Ice now?
I started with them in the summer. I've only actually written a few articles with them. I have a few. My big workload was definitely last year with Jets Nation. I was doing a lot of tracking for zone entries and scoring chances, and when I first hopped over to Arctic Ice, I kind of let Tim and them know that I can't do that this year because I started my master's degree this year. So I'm still keeping track, and I haven't written anything up in it for a long time. But I'm still keeping track of goals and whatnot and how goals happen, but it's been a while since I've actually written anything there, but I do post our Jetstream stuff on there, and I think that gives them, I'd like to think it gives them another sort of content for their site as well, and kind of keeps at least a weekly thing going.
And for those of you that haven't actually seen or heard the Jetstream podcast yet, and again, my experience was listening at first, and it sounds like a very slick, you know, it's about an hour long, like, podcast. It's organized into segments, and I was saying there's a spelling bee, for example, and what was it, the team of the week?
Yeah,
and
Joe's got a team of the week, we got our spelling bee, and things we learned every week, and those three have been the ones that have kind of stuck for us, so.
But what's really impressive about it is if you go to YouTube and actually put it on there, it's a pretty slick setup, not, like, production-wise and, you know, kind of studio-wise. Do you want to kind of talk about?
Yeah, sure. That's 100% Neil. I'm sure you'd love to hear that you like it. Neil is, surprisingly, and I think a lot of people would actually be kind of shocked to know that Neil does all the stuff he does for us just out of the fact that he loves doing it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Neil was very much into the wanting to just produce something, not necessarily be the content. At the time we talked about it at first, he actually does do a basketball radio show with UMFM. And I think they're actually turning that into a podcast too, but Neil, it's in Neil's basement. We started originally just around a table where is actually behind where the camera sits now. We were just on a table there, and we were just spitballing again one day about wanting to get a video camera because it's just another way that people could watch. It might be something people would prefer. And Neil's got, first it started with him getting a GoPro and wanting to kind of video it that way, and then it didn't really like that, so he got another camera, and yeah, he developed the logos and Neil is, Joe and I take a lot of the credit, but Neil does all of the work for the podcast. He's the one who gets everything put together. He's the one who knows how to get it uploaded. He's the one with the equipment. He's the one with everything. So if it wasn't for Neil, we wouldn't have a podcast at all. So
You've got an intro, you've got a video screen.
Yep.
When you have people on Skype, they're right there. It's yep, like sitting at the table.
Yeah, he's he sets that up with his Xbox, and yeah, he does a really good job, and he does a lot of playing with stuff afterwards, because one thing that I don't... If you listen to the earlier episodes, you can pick on up on it a little bit more. I'm very loud a lot of the time with the mics, and Joe is dead quiet. Like, Joe's a very soft talker, and I get very loud when I talk, which I'm sure people have noticed. So
I got a question coming up.
Yeah, Neil does a lot of the playing with our voices, and he's found out a good way to work it. There's actually a lot of lighting work that Neil's done, because you'd be surprised how much that blue screen behind us. If you watch through a lot of the episodes, there's a segment in time where that TV screen with our logo changes colors like every week because Neil was trying to find what one actually looked normal. We actually had a really funny stretch of time too where Neil could not figure out for the life of him why he couldn't get the camera level, and it's something that Joe and I would look at and be like, it's fine, it's good enough, but Neil is very particular with it, and he was spending weeks on end just putting little pieces of paper underneath these little things trying to figure out why he couldn't get his camera level, and it turns out he mentioned it to his dad at one point, and their basement's actually not level.
Okay.
So it turns out it was the actual floor that wasn't level.
So just some renovations and you'll take care of the whole thing.
So yeah, we figured out that we aren't crazy, it was the actual floor, but yeah, Neil puts a lot of work in, and he's constantly trying to think of ways or stuff we can have on the table that isn't looking too cluttered and stuff on the walls that would look good to have there. So, yeah, I owe a lot to Neil for how well the podcast is done.
So you mentioned that you get a little animated on the show, and we've seen you animated on Twitter, but you've actually said that you're relatively calm in general?
Yeah, I think people are kind of surprised when they watch hockey games with me for the first time because I don't get really excited with them. The most animated I've ever really been watching a hockey game was when the Leafs collapsed in Game 7. That was probably the only time I've been, like, visually and physically just, like, could not believe what was happening.
I think I can understand.
Yeah, it was it was rough, yeah. But yeah, I usually stay pretty quiet in person, and I watch a lot of things, and I try not to get too wound up about specific games because it is just one of 82 for the most part. It's usually on Twitter that I'm thinking out loud and letting my brain just kind of go. That's why I love Twitter. It's kind of a spot where I can just let my hockey mind flow. And I'm not sure exactly how that comes across to people a lot of the time. And on the podcast, it's kind of a collection of the last week of things that might have all added up at once, all coming out at once. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I'm sitting down and watching a game myself, I'm usually one of the most quiet people in the room unless someone really gets me going with something.
You picked a good pair of teams to follow if you... you like kind of outbursts from here or from time to time.
Yeah, it's I've got a habit for picking just when the Packers, for example, lost their game against Seattle this year.
Yeah,
I was just kind of thinking back into like the last however many years of my sporting life where I've had, I think it's four epic Leaf just fall off the face of the earth events in a row. The Bombers have been brutal. The Packers just collapsed epically. The Jets hadn't made the playoffs. I've got a knack for picking sports teams, apparently.
In my lifetime, I have three times that my team has won, and all three were Team Canada Hockey.
Oh, yeah.
At 2002, which will be the most, like, even though the 2010 one was cool because it was in Vancouver,
yeah.
2002 will be the biggest one for me because it was the first time in my life where I was like, the team that I like really, truly, emotionally, like, I'm dying for them to win one something.
Yeah.
That was a big deal, so.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I've warned people about before, is that if, I like to say win, but I feel like I have to say if the Leafs ever do in my lifetime win a Stanley Cup, that will be one of the most emotional days of my life, and I think I've told a few people now that if they were ever on the brink of it, or in, like, one game away from winning the Cup, that I'm going to Toronto, and I'm staying in that city until they bring one home, or just crying my way back home. So yeah, it'll be when it's the tough times like it has been the last however many years with them, I like to think about what it's going to be like when they do actually win, and all the people that I can rub it in the face of. So yeah,
it's been 48 years, and I always think, like, it's getting to that point, like, you're obviously quite young, you've got a lot of time left, but there are people now that have been waiting 48 years for this to happen, and it's like you're starting to think, like, is it going to happen before I die?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I couldn't imagine being like, I got some older friends who, or people I've met who have been sitting there telling me, don't get your hopes up, because I've been waiting just as long, if not twice as long as you've been alive, for this to happen. And Yeah, it's interesting because I follow the Steve Dangle podcast a lot, and he used to work. I don't know how many people, especially your listeners, might actually have ever listened to him, but he used to work at the Toronto Zoo, okay. And he's a pretty big Leaf blogger, and he used to always talk about how whenever he was looking at the crowds that were around, it would be all the older men and the grandpas with the Leaf stuff on, and all the kids were wearing the Crosbys, Ovechkins, and stuff like that. And I think that's one thing that Leaf fans have always, or at least my age and older, have always thought about, is like, man, a lot of these kids have never seen that team anything close to good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird to think about. And I think that's why a lot of us get so emotionally invested in the Jets, and we don't want that to happen, because I think, and you were talking about it with Arby last week, about that thought of them maybe leaving, and I think Arby made a good point about they're probably not, just because of who's investing in them, but kids aren't afraid to tell you you suck. And yep. If the Jets aren't very good, I think that's where you're going to start seeing, where kids are going to go to what's good. If it ends up being teams in your own division that are the really good team, the Jonathan Taves, it's very easy to jump on the Blackhawks bandwagon, mm-hmm. So... I think it'll be a bit of a struggle if the Jets aren't good, and hopefully they're turning it around right now, to see them jumping on to Jonathan Taves, who's actually going to bring the Stanley Cup home, and things like that. So,
by the way, it's March 10th, so we're recording this almost a week early, and the Jets game is on in the background, and it's 2-1 for St. Louis. So this is the second time that I've recorded while the Jets are on, and not much luck for the Jets.
Yeah.
I'm going to get into some hockey questions at the end, so we'll get into a couple of other things here.
Perfect.
You actually excelled in other sports.
I did.
You're a tall guy.
Yes, I am.
So not shockingly, basketball?
Yep. I played basketball since I was 5, actually. When I first, my parents first tried to get me on skates, it was something I apparently had no business ever wanting to do. And when I was turned 5, I think they gave me, my brothers and I, the decision of bowling or basketball. Cause we used to go bowling in just over, on Pemina here.
Pappy's going to be disappointed that you didn't choose bowling.
Yeah, it was close. I mean, I loved bowling when I did it as a kid. I do distinctively remember the family days of bowling, and, yeah, I ended up picking basketball. And again, that's how I met Neil. That's how I met a lot of the friends I had throughout school. And we were a pretty good team. We won provincials twice. We were ranked all the way through my high school career, and we were one of the top teams in the province throughout it, and it was a sport that I've seen myself playing for a long, long time. Shoulder injuries kind of told me otherwise. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know and could, I coached basketball up until last year. I could break down basketball, I would almost say, better than I could hockey, just because of how long I've played it and how much I've watched it. I still love watching March Madness. Not a big NBA guy.
Okay. Do you have an NBA team that you kind of?
I'll pay attention to the Raptors, sort of. Mm-hmm. I'll pay attention to guys like Andrew Wiggins, just because he's Canadian. Being so intertwined in Justin Rowan's Twitter timeline, I think I've kind of somewhat followed the Cavaliers through their very interesting last 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pay attention to them as well, but it's not really my cup of tea for the most part. I think when the Raptors were doing well, they started sucking me in a little bit more.
Yeah,
especially just because the Leafs were always been so abysmal. It's just nice to see something in Canada and something in Toronto do well. But yeah, it's not really what I do. I'm a huge Tar Heels fan, so I'll watch UNC all the time. But other than that, not really.
Do you play volleyball or anything like that?
Yeah. Yep. I played volleyball up through high school as well. My high school, I went to Fort Richmond.
Okay.
Same school as Melissa Martin, actually. Mm-hmm. I meant to go back. I was there not too long ago. I meant to go look for her old grad picture on the walls, but I forgot to.
She'll be thrilled to know that.
Oh, yeah. Next time I'm there, I am going to find it. But I played volleyball throughout high school at our school, and at least when I was there, was never really much of a volleyball school, so we weren't that good. Interestingly enough, I set, which people find really weird. I'm almost 6'5", yeah. And people find it really weird that I was ever a setter, but I just enjoyed that part of it. I played one good year. I don't know if you know the Pischke family at all, but they're a pretty big volleyball family. I played with Dane Pischke, who played, I think he ended up playing for Team Canada not too long, for a while. His dad was a Olympian, his mom was an Olympian, so that was definitely our best years when I played with Dane. But other than that, I played 1 year of club, but basketball was definitely my thing through high school.
And you play, like, pickup hockey? Is that it?
Yeah, I play senior men's hockey now. I've only played for a couple of years, and I know if anybody listens to this about what I talk about, people just rip me apart for it. I did not play when I was a kid, so I'm that kind of typical, you've never played the game kind of target. I like to equate it, though, is that sports are sports, and I understand what it takes to win. That's kind of the arguments I always make. But I play senior men's hockey now. I love it. I don't think I'm awful. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. For a guy that really didn't get any coaching or anything growing up, I'd like to think I hold my own all right. Yeah, I love playing now. I wish I would have liked it when I was that six-year-old kid and would have gone into it. But, yeah, it is what it is.
All right, let's take a little break from the interview to go through some housekeeping items and give you some information about this show. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can look us up at Beyond the Handle is the handle for the show. So definitely give us a follow there. We are on Facebook. Do a search for Beyond the Handle and we will pop right up there for you. If you are not listening to this show via iTunes or Stitcher, you can go to each of those platforms and subscribe to the show. Again, just go in and search for Beyond the Handle. We will pop up there for you. Click on subscribe and the new episodes will download to your device every week as soon as they are posted, which is nice, easy, and convenient. Of course, if you just want to hear a stream of a specific episode, you can also go to beyondthehandle.podomatic.com and you can find the show right there and listen to any episode that you would like to hear. If you'd like to email me and give me some feedback, recommend a guest, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself, I'd love to hear from you. The email address is beyondthehandle@gmail.com. And again, any feedback via Twitter or via email is very much appreciated. So yes, please reach out to me. We are a part of the Garbage Hill Network of podcasts. This is Winnipeg's first podcast network and features a number of local podcasts from around the city of Winnipeg. You can give them a follow at Garbage Hill on Twitter. And their website is www.garbagehillnetwork.com. All of their podcasts are featured. Some of the ones that I've been listening to lately include Couch Surfing, Witch Police Radio, Loose Ropes Wrestling, and the No One Is Safe podcast. They all have Twitter handles as well, so definitely check out those shows. But you can find everything all in one organized place at the Garbage Hill Network. Again, that's www.garbagehillnetwork.com. So with all that being said, let's get back into part two of our interview with Travis Rubinick here on Beyond the Handle. So now, in school, you are taking your Master's of Science in Kinesiology?
Yes, sir.
And is it the general study, or are you talking about concussions when in the questionnaire? So
yep.
Are you looking specifically at that, or is that just one thing that you're interested in? Okay. By the way, it's a 3-1.
Oh, is it? Lovely.
Yeah.
Hutch has not been playing so well lately.
No.
Kinesiology is generally... it's a generalist degree, so there's a lot of different things you can do with it. For the most part, it's just the science of movement and the science of your body. My aspect of it, once you get into the master's of the area, you kind of need to start focusing in on something. So some of my friends will go do cardiac stuff with exercise. I have a lot of friends doing stuff with policies and stuff like that, trying to get activity and fitness kind of involved. I am in the concussion side of things. My project is kind of a baseline look at what we were trying to come up with, a new protocol for concussions in a way. That's eventually what I want to get into, is concussion research, and that's kind of where I want to specialize. So hopefully I can get going with that. I do know a few people, and I'm hoping to kind of let that lead to a good path for me. Again, we had Arby on talking about the whole concussion side of things. Mm-hmm. That's kind of exactly where I want to go with it, is finding either a better diagnostic technique. You never, can't really find a cure for them, but ways to treat people and hopefully have find ways so the problems you see in the NHL don't occur with the repeated concussions problem in the NFL, start kind of getting dealt with better. And
I gotta throw it in pro wrestling too.
Oh yeah, pro wrestling as well. Yeah, totally. It's a hot topic right now, which mm-hmm. is helpful, but also kind of a pain in the butt, because that means a lot of people are trying to do it. But it was just something that I suffered from. One, it's probably 4 years ago now that kind of, I was still kind of between what I wanted to do with my life for the most part. And it was a weird experience for me, and it ended up leading to me kind of being interested in the area. Ended up doing a bit of research as a summer job, and then I just kind of led my way to what I'm doing now. So, yeah, it's an interesting area for sure.
Do you think that, I guess I'll start with the NFL, because I think that's the sport where you have heard the most about concussions, at least of the big four, recently. Do you think that they're doing enough at this point? Or do you think that they're still... Because at this point now, I know that there's concussion protocol that players have to go through even during games before they can be put in back into action, practice, etc., which you never heard of even 5 years ago. But is that enough?
I think they're taking steps, and I think the criticism that's been going on is very fair. I don't want to say it's enough. The big problem with concussions right now is that it takes so long for those protocols to go through, and when you're, especially a sport like football, where there's so many people on the field at once, for one or two trainers to see something happen, a lot of these things are, guys stand up, and I think it was Richard Sherman who wrote an awesome blog last year about how he himself has seen guys who are very clearly concussed that the trainers can't see that they aren't looking right, but they aren't going to go and say anything because their jobs are on the line. And that is really, in my opinion, the big problem is it's so easy for an athlete to hide it, and it takes so long for teams to go through these protocols that you can't really go about it in an easy, direct way. If it was as simple as give me your finger, take a prick of blood, run a blood test in 2 minutes and tell you if you have a concussion, then I think that's where you got to end up going. And there is actually a group in Sweden working on that. But again, like technically right now, there is no way to actually diagnose concussion. It's just based off of how someone feels. A lot of it is just guesswork at this point. I think some of the work that's going on even in the city is really taking good steps towards whether it's finding a diagnosis or finding ways to help treat people. I've seen people that have been suffering from concussions for 4 to 5 years, and it sucks. So in the professional sports, I think they've got a long way to go. I think, quite honestly, as much as guys like myself and Arby like to go at the media for what they do a lot of the time and some of the negative tone they take, I think at the concussion aspect, that's one thing that they have a lot of power in, is changing that mentality and not having guys like, not to call anyone out, not to have guys like Don Cherry go on the air and say, you got to deal with it, and have people willingly saying, no, you can't just accept this. I think that does help a lot. But yeah, there's definitely a long way to go still.
For those, everyone's heard the term concussion. And I think that there's some knowledge of the seriousness of it. But in non-medical terms, describe what a concussion actually is.
For the most part, it's when your brain has had damage done to it. It's when you actually look at what it does to your brain, it's pretty scary. There's actually a really good YouTube video, and I think it kind of helps people wrap their head around it if they can actually tolerate looking at it. There's a good YouTube video of a prof who had just had, it's not someone with a concussion, but she is holding an actual brain that has been dissected. And when you actually see how pliable and how easy it is to actually deform a brain, I think that kind of helps you wrap your head around how easy it is just to get that motion, something going on in there. Basically, it's when your brain is getting hit against your skull or even moved or torqued or twisted in a way that neurons inside of it, so the little cells inside your brain are either getting stretched or torn or something's going on so those connections aren't there anymore, and just things aren't right. It's probably the easiest way to explain what's going on there.
Basically, like, don't fuck around with your head.
Yeah, that's the most part. I mean, I'm in a neuroanatomy class right now, and it's kind of a weird concept because we do see cadavers and we do deal with these. That's how you're going to learn about it, right? And it's a weird concept to kind of go through and hold it and just think, like, this was somebody's everything. Like, all your thoughts, movements, and everything come from that one organ.
Yeah.
And you can break an arm and it's going to heal. If you break your brain, it's the only one you've got, and it can only do so much healing on its own. And it's scary to think about at times, but at the same time, like, your body is crazy impressive in how it's come up with mechanisms to help protect itself. But it can't do everything. So I think people need to either, and it's hard to say to an athlete, give up what you're doing right now and potentially lose your job because you could be getting sick for something that we really don't know about yet, especially in that mentality where they've grown up their whole lives with the Warriors state and they need to fight through these things and I'm going to let my teammates down. But it's something they've just got to do. And the interesting thing is there's been a lot of work looking at what do athletes think of these things. And if you, for the most part, if you ask an athlete, are you going to be upset with a teammate if they pull themselves out because they have concussion? Most of them say no. But if you ask that same athlete, what would you think if you pulled yourself out of a game? Most of them are going to say, my teammates are going to think I'm letting them down. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of that weird mental state that they all, that a lot of athletes have, that they, it's kind of an ironic balance there. So,
and do you have career aspirations with, well, you must, you're taking your master's. So what are your career aspirations?
I want to get, right now I've got a nice setup where I am. So I'm hoping to go right into my PhD when I'm done my master's. And then, I mean, optimal goal, I think, in anybody who's trying to take that career is to run your own research group and be looking at those kind of things. I think those are pretty lofty because it's very difficult to get to that point. But I'd be really happy. Honestly, with where things are going in the city, I think a lot of people don't know about it, but the city's got a really good groundwork on concussion research starting. And I think it'd be great to be able to stay here and work on it for the rest of my life and work as a doctor in this area and not necessarily see patients because I don't want to get my general practitioner or anything like that, but work researching and have my PhD working in trying to either find a better diagnostic technique for concussions or find a way to just help people is kind of where I think a lot of people who do go into a master's or PhD want to go.
Okay. Speaking of brain hurting, it's 4-1 St. Louis.
Oh, man.
Hutchinson got yanked. He let in 4 goals, 7 shots, and Pavlik's in net.
Lovely.
So
it's a headache and a half. I think you got to stop recording on Thursday.
I think I might be recording on Thursday, too, so we'll see how it goes. Sorry, sorry, Jets fans. I want to ask you now quite a bit of hockey-related stuff, and you said very interested in hockey, so I'm sure you won't mind, and hopefully listeners out there are good with this as well. Because you do a lot of work with Arctic Ice Hockey and advanced stats and advanced analytics, that's kind of where I want to go. And kind of like as you spoke with concussions, I want you to kind of teach us folks who may not be experts in the field about some of this stuff. But the first thing I want to ask you is, do you think that the term advanced stats or advanced analytics puts some people off?
I think so, a little bit. It's one of those things where people, especially a casual fan, doesn't want to have to sit there and study to be able to enjoy or understand what someone on a broadcast talking about. Like, I used to watch baseball a little bit when I was younger. I turned away from that because of basketball, mostly. But when I started kind of looking at it again, there were just so many numbers and names and things that I got turned off from it. And I don't want that to happen with hockey, which as much as people were kind of saying, oh, you got to stick with the Corsi and Fenwick names when the NHL started adopting these things on their own site, I think changing them to just shot attempts and unblocked shot attempts is actually a really good idea. Get away from that mentality of these have to be an advanced metric. It's a shot attempt. It's not advanced at all. A lot of it is very baseline. So I think it does turn some people away. And if someone's listening right now and that is what turned you away, don't let it. It's really not that complex. It's just another way of looking at things. So I like the name changes. I prefer if someone does just say analytics as opposed to advanced stats or even just fancy stats is like whatever. Just I'd almost say just keep away from that advanced side of things.
Okay. Corsi. What is Corsi?
Shot attempts. Basically.
So it's basically the shot attempts that my team makes versus the shot attempts that your team makes.
Yeah, like one Corsi is one shot attempt, and it can be a shot attempt for, a shot attempt against. If you're looking at Corsi percentage, Corsi 4 percentage, it's basically the percentage of all shot attempts that went towards the opponent net or towards you.
If I'm playing, my Corsi is probably going to be about 10% because 9 out of every 10 shots are going to be on my net.
Yeah.
That's the idea?
Yeah, your Corsi 4 percentage would then be 10%.
I may not even get 10%. All right. Why is Mark Stewart a 5 or 6 D-man and not any higher? Based on yours and I guess a lot of folks at Arctic Ice Hockey and probably in that community's analysis.
I think a lot of it, Mark Stewart gets a lot of credit for, and I actually talked about this yesterday on Jetstream, so we'll have that up today, or I guess a week ago when this gets posted. Mark Stewart gets a lot of credit for being a tough guy, a guy that blocks a lot of shots, a guy that does a lot of things in that gritty aspect. And I think from the advanced or the analytics sort of side of looking at things, those are the things that usually happen when a guy is hemmed in his own end a lot of the time. And Mark Stewart is a guy that he takes what's always been kind of seen as the safe play out of trouble. Mm-hmm. And that's usually you're throwing it up off the glass, just getting the puck out sort of thing. And that's great, and it looks really good, and it's something that catches people's eye, and that's where we talk about the eye test a lot. When you mm-hmm. make a big hit, everyone remembers that big hit, and they forget the four attempts that you had at the blue line to make that hit that missed entirely. Mm-hmm. A lot of those plays that he makes are plays that tend to end up in the other team getting the puck, hemming you in your own zone, and creating shot attempts. And shot attempts, and the reason people use this Corsi or shot attempts metrics is because it's what's been correlated the most with actually winning hockey games. We'd love to use goals, that's great, but goals happen so rarely, and there's such a one out of every 10 at best mm-hmm. attempts that it's such a small sample of what's actually happening in a hockey game that it's hard to just say what's going on with goals alone. That's why we try to broaden our sample size by looking at shots. So guys like Mark Stewart, it's perfectly exactly what I said in the podcast yesterday, or on Jetstream yesterday, is yeah, Mark Stewart's probably got a lot of leadership. He's got, I think it was off that Paul Maurice interview that was a couple days ago. He's got a lot of leadership. Sure, he's a great fitness guy. Sure, he wants to be in the city, but that has nothing to do with his actual performance on the ice. He gets a lot of credit for stuff that doesn't necessarily help a hockey team win. And I think I use the reference of Mike Keane. I'm sure I've seen Mike Keane recently. He's a very fit guy. Mm-hmm. He's a great leader, and he wants to be in Winnipeg. So that if that's the best effect you can have on a team, why are you on the ice? And I know for a fact Mark Stewart's a great human being. From what everything I've heard and every time I've interacted with him ever, mm-hmm. he's always been a nice stand-up guy, and he's the kind of guy that I'm sure True North would love to have representing your team. The fact of the matter is, a lot of the things he does just end up putting in the Jets in positions that are usually going to lead to losing. So I think Jacob Trouba's done an amazing job of making him respectable and yeah. pulling his play up a little bit. But I think a lot of the things where it comes to the plays he makes, to the decisions he makes of trying to run guys over, to slightly moving out of where he should be, trying to make too many big, gritty plays almost, end up costing the Jets more than it helps benefit them.
When you use stats as part of the narrative, sometimes you get accused of using selective stats to boost your own narrative. Mm-hmm. Can you think of an example where the stats have actually proven something that you've thought wrong?
I think Phil Kessel's a good example of that. I love Phil Kessel. I think Phil Kessel is a heck of a hockey player, but for the most part, he's been a horrible possession guy. Most of the Leafs are horrible possession players, so I don't know how much of that has necessarily been an effect of the coaching. His line's actually been a bit better since Randy Carlyle left. I think, and a lot of people are actually going to be surprised about this, goaltending-wise, James Reimer was a guy who I was pretty high on for a while. He had a couple great years. Lately, it's been the opposite case. I'd like to still try to defend him, but it's getting harder and harder with the numbers he's been putting up. Yeah, the thing with advanced stats is it is, and you can say a lot of the stuff, you can pick out those numbers and help make your argument mm-hmm. however you want it. But I like to think of it more of you get a better idea as to why someone's something they are. And I think a perfect poster boy for that was Evander Kane this year. A lot of people were criticizing his lack of goal scoring and things like that. When you apply these analytics or advanced stats, whatever you want to call them, you can start seeing that he's starting more in the defensive zone. He's facing harder competition, things like that. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to go out and say, oh yeah, he's still a prolific goal scorer. He could be, but he just wasn't put in that role in Winnipeg. So I think it's not necessarily something that's proven otherwise from what I've seen. And there have been plenty of instances where I thought someone's had a great game and they've ended up being hemmed in their own end more than not. But it's something that I think gives a lot of context to what's actually going on the ice and gives you a better way to kind of think of how things could be better. And I think that's what Garrett does a great job of. As much as I like to use advanced stats, Garrett is light years ahead of me in that aspect. So yeah. He's a guy I love to reference and at least read what he's going on. It's a community of a lot of bouncing things off one another. And I don't think people fully appreciate how critical people who use these numbers are of one another. I've seen more pretty heated arguments on Twitter between two guys that agree about analytics and their usage than I do people just chirping at advanced guys saying, oh, you have no idea what you're talking about. It gets pretty heated between these communities themselves a lot of the time. So
for the people that chirp at you and at the, particularly the Arctic Ice community, at least here in Winnipeg,
yeah.
I don't want to focus too much on negativity, but the ones that, you know, really kind of give it to you guys. If there was advice that you'd give to them that's saying, like, just here's why I see it in this way, and this is all I'm saying, basically. Yeah. Like, what would you say to someone that wanted to listen?
If someone was willing to take the minute and actually want to learn about it, I would tell them to read the whole article. Because the number of times that I've seen, whether it's something Garrett's written or something that Tim wrote up or something, any sort of stat thing, I feel like people a lot of the time read half an article and don't finish it because either they get lost or they just don't want to hear it. So I think the first thing I'd say is read the whole article first, then we can have a discussion. The second thing I want to say is I enjoy conversing with people. I enjoy listening to what someone else has to say and hearing these counter arguments a lot of the time. Because again, especially, and I like to compare advanced data stats and all these kind of analytics to a lot of the research side of things, because that's what people use. They use statistics and research to find these sort of numbers. And I think what I'd like to kind of make my argument on a lot of the time is, again, it's just that context side. And it's providing some sort of context to it, and it's giving you an idea of what's happening, and it gives you a sort of frame to wrap your mind around. Or in another aspect, a lot of these numbers are the things that correlate to winning. So, yeah, a lot of the grit and toughness and a lot of those things are great to have if it helped you win, but you can only make so many arguments before you sit back and have to think to yourself, okay, well, he's doing all these things and I'm seeing all these things, but it's not overall helping the team. And that's been the big argument for Byfuglien being a defenseman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks great when you have this huge guy storming down the wing. It looks great when you have this huge guy standing in front of the net. Fact of the matter is, he helps the team win more when he's a defenseman, and the team is usually hampered when he's on the ice as a forward. So I try at times to say, yeah, it's great with Byfuglien as a forward. It looks good, but I know in my heart that every other number is saying, no, his goal production goes down. The team's goal production goes down. The possession numbers go down. Everything is hampered when he's a forward as compared to a defenseman. So I'd like to try to explain that in better terms. I'm not that great at doing that. That's, again, something Garrett's really good at, I think. But I think a lot of the arguments could just be solved if people read an entire article a lot of the time instead of just stopping halfway through.
What's the most exciting thing happening with the Jets right now?
I don't want to take the easy way out and say the kids. I think it's very easy to look at the prospects and get excited. But I'm very much a believer of don't get too hyped up on prospects. Guys fall apart all the time. We saw it with the Blue Jays today. Things can look great, but you're one ACL tear away from, oh my goodness, what's going on, or career potentially ending. Like, Nick Ehlers is a guy who's very easy to get hyped up about, but and knock on wood, this never happens, but what if he tears his ACL? What if he gets his Achilles sliced by a skate? All of a sudden, he's gone, and you have to do something else about that. So the kids are a very easy thing to get wrapped around and get very excited for, but if I had to pick something other than that, I'd probably go with Paul Maurice.
Okay.
He's made a lot of good decisions. He's almost bought an ability to make and I think he has bought the ability to make a few mistakes along the way and not have myself and Arby and all these Arctic guys being like, what are you doing? His ways of working around that plague of injuries on the defensive core and the way he handled that was extremely impressive. And I think that's something that the Jets just didn't have with Claude Noel. And I think he's kind of given a mentality to a lot of these guys that, and you can see it in the goaltending right now, if you prove yourself, you're going to get your chance to play. And I think he might even have a better communication stream with Kevin Cheveldayoff. And I think that's why you saw Carl Klingberg get traded, for example. He might have given him his chance and said, you know what, I don't like him. This is why. Go see what you can get for him. They brought in a good piece. So I think Paul Maurice has made a very good and positive impact on the Jets, and I think he's probably something that fans could get very excited about going forward.
What are you most excited about with the Leafs? I know you're excited about the trade a few weeks ago.
Yeah, oh yeah, Clarkson being gone, I think it was shocking to me how many Leaf fans just forgot about that when the Leafs didn't do anything at the trade deadline. That was, like, phenomenal. I cannot believe, and again, thank you Columbus for figuring that out, but I would love to say I'm most excited about the draft, but I know they're going to find, I just feel that they're going to find a way to screw that up. I like to joke about it, but I'd honestly be afraid of them winning the lottery and doing something dumb with it. So I would like to hope that they would do something smart, but I've learned to not believe that's ever going to happen.
It sounds familiar. I mean, it's the Jets thing, too. Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, barring whatever the hell happens tonight,
mm-hmm.
this team has been sitting relatively comfortably in that wild card spot for a while, yet...
They're slipping.
Even the believers, like the true believers, you see still the doubts.
Yeah, exactly.
Linger there, and it's just, it comes from years of just getting kicked in the crotch.
Yeah, which is funny because, sorry Jets fan, you've had 4 years of this. It gets worse, so if I was going to be excited about the Leafs for one thing, though, I think it is their new management group. I think Brendan Shanahan and the group that they've built and brought in around Kyle Dubas, I think that group alone is something to get excited about. Again, when you talk to most Leaf fans, they will all say it's something to be excited about, but we've seen this team leaf it up a million times. So it's cautious optimism, I would say.
What's your favorite thing about Twitter?
The interactions with people. Even the people who do nothing but troll. It takes a lot for me to block somebody. I think it was only like a week ago that I actually, or two to 3 weeks ago that I actually blocked my first person.
Okay.
I've muted a few people before, but it's one of those things where you really, really have to go far for me to block you. I just love hearing countering opinions, and there are people I get frustrated with all the time. And there's people that I'll chirp at myself at times because I'm just sick and tired of hearing what you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, meeting people and hearing differing opinions and being able to bounce ideas off of each other is awesome. I love that we make jokes about it all the time at work that I seem to know what's going on in the world and before anybody else in my office because most of them aren't huge Twitter users. So some big news story will happen. I'll see it on my phone and go, oh, did you hear about this? And then they'll see it for the first time like 5 minutes later. Like, how did you do that? I love that.
Today was NFL free agency
yeah,
day.
Exactly.
I broke the Jimmy Graham trade news to the office because yeah. of Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. I just love that. And I love that. As weird as it is that something like the David Clarkson trade can be forgot about in like 3 days because of how quickly things happen, I love how quickly things happen and how quickly news can spread and how if something's going on, you can know all about it. As long as you're careful, you don't want to believe everything you see on the first note mm-hmm. of it. But I just love how quick and how interactive one thing can be. And I love that it's replaced Facebook because Facebook's fallen apart. But yeah.
Just like MySpace before it?
Oh, yeah. Like, well, not that bad. But, yeah, I just kind of laugh because I still have a few friends who aren't really big Twitter users, and they post so much on Facebook, and it's just, at that point, it's like, get Twitter. This is exactly what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
You never say anything more than 140 characters anyways, so just get Twitter, and you'll love it.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
All right, Spelling Bee, one more time. Your Twitter handle is spelled...
At TRUBENIUK.
T. Rubenick.
T. Rubenick.
Travis Rubenick. Check him out on Twitter. Check him out at Arctic Ice Hockey. Mm-hmm. Check out the Jetstream podcast on YouTube, on iTunes, on Stitcher.
Yeah, we're on Stitcher as well. What else are we on? We're on SoundCloud. We're on a bunch of things. Neil always has to remind me at the end of the shows because we have so many things now. But we're all over the place. We're on a radio sports channel in the States. We're all over the place. So yeah, it's pretty sweet.
So check him out. He's everywhere. It's a great listen once a week. And again, if you like what's on regular radio, that's great. But this gives you another point of view, and they can swear, which is nice too.
We stay uncensored a lot of the time. So we actually it got to the point where we were pretty bad, and we needed to introduce a swear jar. But that's mm-hmm. phased itself out surprisingly. And Joe and I have definitely if you go and listen to the first few episodes. There's a lot of F-bombs, but we phased that out a little bit, and we're a bit cleaner now, but we do drop the odd swear here and there.
So. When it's necessary,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, thanks for coming on to Beyond the Handle.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
So, there you have it. That was Travis Rubenick at... TRUBENIUK, T. Rubenick on Twitter. If you want to give him a follow and also go and check out the Jetstream podcast, easiest place is to just go to jetstreampodcast.com. You can also find links to the podcast over at arcticicehockey.com, as well as some of Travis's written work. And you can also find the Jetstream podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher or on YouTube. Go and search it out. It's a great listen and a great watch. So definitely go and give it a listen. Next week, I am going to be out of town. I'm traveling to Vancouver, and I'm going to see a Jets game, so it's very exciting. But I have already completed next week's interview. Very exciting one with Mr. Brian Grebe, who is a native of San Francisco, California, but is a big-time Winnipeg Jets fan and a Winnipegger at heart. So that will be posted at the regular time. We post new shows every Monday night, so that it is there for you on Tuesday morning. So definitely stay tuned for that one, because it was a great interview as well. So thank you once again to Travis, and thank you to everybody who has downloaded and is listening to the show and providing us with some great feedback at Beyond the Handle on Twitter or beyondthehandle@gmail.com if you want to email. We're going to close the show with a band called Volage. You've been hearing their music throughout the show. The track is called Paulina. They're from Paris, France, and you can find them definitely over at Bandcamp. And I believe if you give them a search on iTunes, you can find their music there as well. Definitely check them out. So thanks again, everybody, and we will see you all in a week.